stay connected to the world around you, KPBS brings you trusted news, compelling stories, and in-depth reporting every day. Wherever life takes you, KPBS is here, on the radio, online, and on the go. Discover more at kpbs.org.
Welcome in San Diego, it's Jade Hindman. On today's show, Democratic Congressman Scott Peters gives reaction to the U.S. attack in Venezuela. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. So Congress returns to work this week, and it comes with a lot on its plate to start the new year. Expiring health care subsidies and the possibility of another government shutdown are on that list. But this weekend's military actions in Venezuela and the capturing of its president, done without congressional approval, will also be a major focus. I'm joined by Democratic Congressmember Scott Peters, who represents the 50th District in San Diego. Representative Peters, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jade. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well. So listen, on Saturday, you released a statement saying you were deeply alarmed by the U.S. actions in Venezuela. Tell us more about your reaction.
Well, first of all, no one's going to shed any tears for Nicolas Maduro, who's a repressive dictator. He's illegitimate leader. And, you know, we're not sorry to see something like bringing him to justice come about. But the problem is that there are always costs to these things that come afterwards. So while this may be very popular in the moment in Venezuela and among Venezuelans in America, we've seen this movie before. We've seen, you know, taking on small countries, whether it's Vietnam or Afghanistan or Iraq, and we deposed Saddam Hussein. That was very popular at the time. But what it led to was 2 decades of war. It led to trillions of dollars of American taxpayer money out the door, and we lost thousands of lives. And that's the thing that concerns me here. And also the motive of it seems to be not really to deal with drug trafficking, not really to deal with national security, but to open up the oil reserves in Venezuela to American companies, which is really an illegitimate purpose for this kind of foreign policy action. So yeah, I'm concerned about it. I think we deserve to know why this was done and what happens next, but particularly what happens next, because I don't think the administration seems to have a plan.
Yeah, in your statement, you also said that this weekend's actions, quote, seem to be a move on Venezuelan oil resources, right, as you just alluded to. As a member of the Energy and Commerce Committee in Congress, how do you plan to address those concerns?
I have to say, you know, to step back from this particular thing, what the Trump administration is doing to American energy security is really damaging. The way that they have, unlike other countries, focused solely on oil and gas to the detriment of innovations around wind, solar, battery storage, and all the things that other countries are doing to make themselves more secure, to provide affordable energy, to provide more reliable energy. We're just not doing it. And, you know, Trump in particular has a vendetta against wind and solar. This is sort of doubling down on that as energy policy. It's really, really counterproductive for us. It's not in our interests. And by the way, it's just not in the government's portfolio to use the army to take over oil reserves in another country. It's the kind of thing we haven't seen before. That's why I'm really interested in getting a briefing. Congress has not been told about this. We're back to work starting tomorrow back here in D.C., and I'm looking forward to getting a full briefing on what the motive was behind this, why he was talking to oil companies before the invasion, not to Congress, and how he spoke about oil companies, I don't know, 20 times, it seemed like, in his announcement about the raid. And so, I just think all around, it's not in the interest of American taxpayers or energy consumers.
Mm-hmm. Leading up to this, the Trump administration had been bombing boats out there in the Caribbean, off the coast of Venezuela as well. In hindsight, what are your thoughts on that military action and then leading up to what's happened this past weekend?
You know, it's a violation of international law. It's pretty clear to me. It's murder. We without any evidence, without any process, we're just killing people on the open seas. That doesn't sound American to me. You know, in fact, it was 80 years ago that America built this new world order based on international law through the Marshall Plan. We've had decades of prosperity and peace and good alliances. We've made friends. We've cultivated alliances with countries who can help us. We've turned our back on those allies under the Trump administration now, and we're making enemies. And I know the UN is going to investigate whether this particular action in Venezuela conforms to international law or not. And I think, this is not the example that you want the superpower to set. We want to be a beacon to other countries of democracy, of the rule of law, of doing the right thing. And this is a real setback for us, Jade. I'm really, really concerned about the damage this is doing to us reputationally, about what, when we need friends in the future, whether we're going to be able to call on them, because we're losing friends and we're making enemies. It's not a strategy for peace.
Well, now that, you know, Maduro is in U.S. custody, Venezuela's vice president was sworn in as the country's interim president today. But here's some of what President Trump had to say at a Saturday press conference just after the attack.
We're going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. So we don't want to be involved with having somebody else get in, and we have the same situation that we had for the last long period of years. So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition.
There were other candidates who won the popular vote in Venezuela. What are your thoughts on the leadership of the country right now and his statement?
We're going to run the country. What does that even mean? I mean, there's obviously no strategy for this. As you said, there were democratic elections. Maduro is illegitimate. And apparently the inaction will lead to us allowing his vice president to step in, part of the same regime. And I don't know, we're going to pretend that that's different. We should be on the side of democracy. That's sort of been the history for my whole lifetime of America. It's been the example we've set, and we're really doing a poor job of showing off to the world on this count. I think we should be on the side of democracy, and we're not. We're on the side of invading people. We're on the side of killing people on the open seas without evidence or due process. We are on the wrong side.
Given that we are in this situation, do you have any information on the role the U.S. military might be asked to play going forward?
Well, I do know that, unlike in Ukraine, the president says he's got no problem with boots on the ground. Again, we've seen this before. We saw this in Vietnam. You know, we thought that was going to be a weak opponent. Afghanistan, Iraq, we end up dedicating a lot of resources and a lot of lives. And in San Diego, we know what that means. We're a military town. We know the cost of these conflicts to our people and to their families. And we don't take these kinds of things lightly. Meanwhile, this government is not America first. We're making Venezuela great again, if we're paying any attention to Venezuela. This is not about America. And all the things we should be focused on here in Washington, D.C., preserving healthcare, dealing with these tariffs, dealing with, appropriate immigration policy, that's all pushed aside now because we've decided to go attack Venezuela, a country that's not even in our weight class. It's horrifying and embarrassing, and I just can't imagine the confidence that's been lost around the rest of the world in the United States of America.
San Diego is home to a large military community. You referenced them earlier. What words do you have for active duty members and their families in the wake of what happened this weekend and what could potentially happen?
First of all, thank you for doing the job you do to keep us safe. I'm very happy that in this this mission, no mission is free from risk. No one was killed. And I think that's great. I mean, that's a testament to the professionalism and the talent of our armed forces, which I hope to stand behind. But I would just say, you know, what we have a civilian leadership that that uses the military in a way that concerns me and the rest of the world. But that's not reflection in any way on the performance of our military, which we're very proud of, and I hope continues to be the professional organization that's the most trusted institution today, still in the United States of America, and they've earned it.
You know, and I know there have been discussions about this military action and the lack of congressional approval. Hakeem Jeffries called a meeting about it yesterday at 2 p.m. How do you expect Congress to respond as it returns to work this week?
Well, I think we are owed, as the American people are owed, an explanation of why this action was taken, what the objectives are, and what the plan is going forward, which I don't think we've seen. And that's job one, is to get that information. And then, you know, going forward, we have the power of the purse. You know, we'll need some Republicans to help us to say, no, you know, the power to declare war, if this is a war, is a power of Congress. The power to appropriate money and spend money, the power of the purse, is the power of Congress. So we can rein this in. We can't do it as just Democrats. But I know some Republicans might be concerned about this as well, and we'll need their partnership to reassert our constitutional role under the founders' intent, and to make sure that we're together forming a foreign policy that's in the interest of the safety and security of the United States. That's a process that, you know, really can't start soon enough this week.
You know, I mean, you all start the new year with all of this on your plate, but that's not the only pressing issue. Also, last year, the U.S. government had its longest shutdown in history. The cost of health care was at the center of it. Where do health care subsidies and overall cost of health care stand?
Well, we do know some Republicans are frustrated with the lack of action on the part of the rest of their party. So this week we will have a vote on extending the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. Folks who need help paying for their health care on the market, that's about to expire. It has expired. And there will be a vote this week to extend it for 3 years. I'm not sure that's what the Senate will agree to, but I think that they'll send us something back, and we should have a compromise. Republicans know that a lot of folks, because of the action that they took in the One Big Beautiful Bill last year, are poised to lose health care because of cuts to Medicaid. They also know that there's an additional 5 million people who will lose health care because the subsidies that help them get health care have been expired and not been extended because of Republican opposition. And we all know that for both of these reasons, that everyone's health care costs are going to go up because insurance companies are going to start to factor in the costs of people getting their first treatment in the emergency room. And so this is a real crisis. It's something, you know, we don't have a perfect healthcare system. I don't think Democrats maintain that the Affordable Care Act is a cure-all. We need to work to make it better, not to cut off the things that are working. And that's what's happened. And unfortunately, I think we will have a vote on it this week over the objection of the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. But there'll be more work to do to get the Senate on board, and I think a lot of us are here to pitch in to make sure that it happens and we don't get into another shutdown situation, which is really, I think, a priority for all of us.
You know, there is this lingering question, Representative, and it is, you know, is Congress doing enough to enforce and to uphold the Constitution? I mean, what does doing so look like to you at this point in your role?
We are not doing enough to uphold the Constitution. I don't think there's any question. It's not a question. I think you could conclude that. The problem we have is that, you know, we need both parties to stand up for the institution. When I came here, John Boehner was the Republican speaker when it came to Congress. You can't imagine he would have let the president have all of this power unchecked when we have a job to do here. Each of us was elected the same day as Donald Trump. To do our independent job, we have the power of the purse. We need to assert that. And you know, we Democrats, we can't do that by ourselves. We need some Republicans to help us with that. But the answer to your question is no. And I don't know. I don't want to wait for control to change in the House and the Senate before I tell you things are going to get better. But I hope that before the elections, Republicans will step up, understand that the president's not a king. This is a government of divided power and checks and balances, and we should assert those. Whether we agree with the president or not, the institution has to be protected, and we are not seeing that now.
All right. I've been speaking with Democratic Congressmember Scott Peters. Representative Peters, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Good to be with you, Jade. Thanks very much.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
From El Centro to everywhere, we're Voices del Valle.
Voices del Valle?
Voices del Valle is a teen-produced podcast about coming of age in California's Imperial Valley.
I love Voices del Valle.
On the next episode of Voices del Valle, we will talk with teens about their cheer and soccer championship seasons. I've got to listen to that. Voices del Valle, fresh voices, bold stories made in the valley.
Voices del Valle, find us on KPBS or wherever you get your podcasts.